Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the 2023 General Economic Policy Guidelines. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Deputy Undersecretary for Economic Planning at the Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Deputy Undersecretary for Public Credit at the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. It's good to have you here. Thanks for joining us. I will be the primary speaker, although Maria Carmen Bonilla is here with me to answer any questions regarding to the debt and the management issues. So let me start. I would make some remarks regarding the economic outlook. Then I will go on and speak a little bit on the inflation side and the packages and the actions and policies that we have put in for to try to contain inflation. Then I will speak a little bit on the revenue side, both regarding the closing of the year to 2022 and the projections that we have in the package. And finally, I will mention something on the expenditure side as well. So first, let me start with the economic outlook. So far, we have seen the Mexican economy has recovered close to 99% of the pre-pandemic levels, although when we subtract the outsourcing effect, the recovery stands at 103% of recovery, meaning that we have seen a full recovery with regard to the economic activity, and that is close what we have observed so far in terms of the domestic demand, both in consumption and investment. We have seen full recovery practically from March, and the dynamism of those two variables are pushing the economy, which is basically most of the part that participates with the economy. We also have seen the export side and the foreign part of the push coming from United States, in particular all the manufacturing exports and the foreign remittances that have support both production and consumption. Now, in terms of the economic outlook for the closing year, we are expecting a 2.4% of growth. Basically, so far we have seen a carryover of 2%, meaning that if we don't grow any more, at least we will have a 2% growth for the year. Although we think that we have some sectors that will be growing, particularly those sectors that have been lagging or were the most affected from the pandemic. Specifically, some food and lodging, apparel and leather and other products and transportation equipment. So if you take at least the food and lodging and you see how much they are having growing in 2022, and you impute that amount of growth for the rest of the year, that would contribute at least to 0.3 percentage point of growth for the year, meaning that with the carryover that we have seen so far, we can conservatively say estimate 2.3% of growth. Also, we have seen some more dynamics with apparel and other products, transportation equipment, which we think that we are going to support growth for this year and next year. Another positive thing regarding the growth of this year and next is the labor market. We have seen a very good job creation numbers. Basically, since December, there are 617,000 jobs more to the economy, and practically all the formal part of that job creation has been growing very good for the year, although it has been decelerating a little bit, But we think that for the rest of the year, we will be having very good figures in terms of the job creation. For the job force participation rate, there's also positive news, both because unlike many other countries, we have recovered practically all the participation that we lost since the pandemic. Currently, we are at 60% of participation rate relative to a 59% in March of 2020. In terms of the available job force in the economy, we still have 1.8 million above the pre-pandemic levels, but just let me say that this is coming from a 40 million number of people that were available and not looking neither for a job or were participating in a formal job or in an informal job. Out of those 1.8, there are women that are not yet incorporating in the labor force, and also some men that are not coming back to the labor force. But we expect that this is going to be normalized once that the pandemic and all the shocks that we have seen start fading out with the economy. In terms of the unemployment rate, underemployed rate, again, we have positive numbers. As of July, we have a rate of 8.3, coming from 30% of underemployed rate in May. And in terms of the formality rate, again, has been a positive thing because we have currently an informal rate of 5.5% of informality rate versus the 5.6 that we had in 2019. Still high relative to other countries, but we are coming from a high numbers, and we think this is going to be positive, both because we're going to get more money into the economy, in especially the workers, and we're going to be collecting that amount for the tax revenues. In terms of the composition of the informality, we have seen the formal companies again coming from currently at 49% in terms of the overall. And in July and January of 2020, formal companies have increased from 49% to 51%, although informal companies have decreased from 51 to 49. Employed people by income, again, we have seen some positive numbers. Basically, the people that have income, the amount of people that have income below or up to one minimum wage decreased from 1.6 million since December of 2018, and from more than five minimum wages has increased about 300,000 since 2018. The rate of critical employment occupancy has also decreased. Currently, it's at 31%, coming from a 35% in December of 2018. And finally, the wages and the real income for the labor force has also increased. Currently, the labor poverty rate for the people employed or the people that have incomes below the poverty line currently stands at 39.1 in the first half 2022, and practically has recovered from the pre-pandemic level, which is basically a 39%. And just to give you an example of how much it has decreased, in 2015, the percentage of people below the percentage of workers below the poverty line were 44%, and now it's 39%. So we have seen a decrease in terms of how many poverty workers have, and basically this is tied to the policies that the government has put in place since the administration. Real income also has increased, so we have seen positive numbers in terms of wages, mostly for the formal part, which has been supported the consumption growth. And for the next year, we expect that the labor market will still be doing pretty much Well, although we have seen some deceleration relative to what we expected in the previous general guidelines, the pre-criteria, and also what we expected in the budget of last year. Now, let me go very quickly in terms of the investment. Again, we've seen positive numbers relative to the recovery, basically driven by the machinery and non-residential part, although the residential part has been lagging, or I would say stagnant relative to the historic levels. The other parts have been growing pretty much well. The FDI, for example, the first half of 2022 has an increase of 12%. Of course, if we subtract the Aeroméxico and the Televisa merger process, and from out of that 12%, about 31 percentage points are explained by greenfields. The reinvestment, it's something that is subtracting because of the Aeroméxico and the Televisa merge, so it's subtracting 21%. And the intercompany investment accounts amount for 1.5 percentage points. So we can say that what is really driving this 12% is greenfield, more than any other component. Finally, I would like to go to the inflation outcome and what have we done and what are our estimates of what we have been helping the economy with the pressures of inflation. First, let me say that what we are expecting for the inflation outcome is for the closing of this year is 7.7% of inflation rate. That's the end of period. And for 2023, we're expecting a 3.2%. We estimate that inflation is going to reach its peak in the third quarter of 22. And basically, the rationality behind is that we have seen some of the commodity prices and cost of transportation going down, although this has been very heterogeneous, but most of the prices have been coming down from its peak. We also think that the China and the Europe economy is going to be cooling down, and it's going to be pressuring especially some of the commodity prices and energy prices. Although the energy prices not related to the gas, because for the natural gas, it's a totally different story. We also have better outcome in terms of the, domestically speaking, we have better outcomes in terms of the rainy seasons. We saw some droughts in the first half of the year. Now the things are getting much better. We also have some controls regarded to the bird flu that we have in the northern part, which is going to be pressuring less some of the prices in the eggs and some poultry and meat. And we also are going to keep the agreements that we have with the private sector in terms of what we call the PASIC agreements and the fuel subsidy for the rest of the year. It's an outcome that we're going to see how it's going to be playing for the next year, but we're going to keep the same policy for this year and next year. Now, speaking of the PASIC, let me discuss a little bit of the results that we have seen so far. So basically, in terms of the alliance that we have with the distributors and the producers regarding to the basic basket of the 24 products, in some estimation that we've done here in the Ministry of Finance, we estimate that the basic price of the basket has decreased about 0.4% relative to the from the second week of August to the first week of May, which is the week when we get to the agreement with the private sector, and something that we call the alternative basket has increased 7.1%. So basically what we are saying is that we have not done anything regarding to the agreement, we would have seen an increase in the basket at least at 7.1% instead of having it decreasing at 0.4%. So just as a reminder, each company still has the freedom to choose any type of product and change the prices accordingly. We are not imposing any restriction in terms of the level of prices or the increases. They are fully free to adjust the prices. And some of the companies have been putting some new brand of the products for the PASIC agreement. And we also know that some of the supermarkets are advertising the PASIC basket, although they don't call it the PASIC like that, but it's something that it's advertised. So yeah, I think that it's helping people to identify which products they need to buy that are the cheapest one and are within the boundaries of the agreement. Now let me go to the cost of the stimulus for the fuel prices. In June, the stimulus peak in terms of the amount of pesos per liter that we provide, it reached 12.5 pesos per liter, and this is the highest point in the year. I mean, we believe it's not that we don't know what's going to happen later, but we expect that the prices are going to be lower and we're going to be converging to more to lower levels at least. And that it's relevant because the amount of cost of the stimulus, it has some has a month at least of lagging, meaning that at least in July the number that we have published is the highest, is the peak that we're going to see in terms of the cost of the stimulus, and as of July the cost has been at 230 billion pesos accumulating from January. And I believe that if just for that month, it's close to 63 billion that we have provided to the economy. And this is the highest number that we are going to see for the year. This is that's what we expect. Now, since August, the stimulus has been no longer necessary, so the IEPS, at least for the regular and the premium gasoline, the IEPS has no subsidy at all. So we are start collecting some excise tax, about 1 peso per liter. I mean, it's still low. We have some stimulus there, but at least we don't have any more the complementary subsidy. Now, the diesel, it's a different story, and basically this has to do with international market. The prices of diesel with regard to other types of fuel has been decoupling. Basically what has happened in Europe, and some of the countries are using more diesel to fuel the energy and the gas, and a substitute for gas and some of the energies that they use for the economy. So that means that they are putting more pressure in the diesel prices. So for that part, we still have some complementary stimulus of about 3 pesos per liter. Now the total amount that we estimate for the year is going to reach 395 billion pesos, close to 400. I know that there is a lot of estimations out there, very pessimistic, some of those regarding to 500 billion pesos. I mean, there's a lot of volatility and there are some effects factoring positive and negative, but at least as of now, this is the best estimate that we have in terms of the cost. And as a reminder, because there has been some confusion regarding to what's really cost and what is really money income and what's really money going out, so the breakdown of that 395, practically two-thirds, it's going to be income that we are not going to collect. That means that this is not money going out from the budget. This is money that is not going to be in the budget. So, and we are going to probably discuss more of it on the close of the year, but just let me say that. Now, one-third of that is money that we do have an expenditure part, but it's money that is leaving the treasury, and it's helping, at least we think it's going to help the economy to smooth the inflationary pressures. Basically, meaning that for that part, the 395 are going to be paid in full, or it's hedged between the oil windfall that we have, because we estimate that we're going to get 398 billion pesos for the extra revenue for the oil for the old revenues. And basically, that is split between the government and Pemex. But at least we think that this is going to be enough to compensate for the cost. In terms of the benefits that we've calculated with the fuel expenditure, let me just say that our estimates show that the accumulated inflation from, let's say, from January 2022 to August, it's about 5.5%, and without the fuel subsidy, we will have at least 6.6% of inflation accumulated from the year. So I would say that we have removed from the economy a 1.1 percentage points of extra inflation cumulative from January to August. Just in June, which was the peak of what we saw in terms of the prices, we estimate that we have took out of the economy 2.6 percentage points directly. Now, what it means in terms of the savings for the Ministry of Finance, we estimate that if we had not had this stimulus, at least that would put a pressure in the observed rate for the monetary policy, currently at 8.5. We think that if we had not done it, we would at least have seen an interest rate of about 11.25 or even more. And that has taken out like 300 basis points out of the financial cost, which amounts close to 100 billion pesos. So that is relieving some cost. Of course, this is indirectly, this is an estimate, but if you factor that in into our stimulus, at least from the cost perspective, this has paid by for itself, or not paid by itself, but this has contributed to at least the cost that we have that we would have seen if we had not been doing anything. Of course, this also has some relief in terms of the real wages. We estimate that cumulate into June, it has took at least 12% of the average wage, and on average, that's about 7% of inflation wage pressure. And for the part of the consumption overall for the economy, we think that again, when there was the huge increase in fuel prices in 2017, we saw a collapse in the consumption expectations for the households. And we think that we are at least relieving the economy for the loss on consumption of about 1% of GDP, which is also something that would be adding to the support that we are taking like overall. Now in 2023, are we going to still continue with the EPS subsidy? Probably the subsidy is going to be there. It's not going to be the complementary, but the subsidy, we expect that we're going to be collecting about 180 billion pesos, which is, higher than we have, that we're going to be collecting this year. And normally the tax is about 5.5 pesos per liter, but since there's still going to be some pressures in the oil market and the gasoline, we think that we are going to be collecting at least 4 pesos per liter next year. Of course, our baseline scenario does not consider the complementary stimulus. It's something that we don't think that the oil prices are going to continue to deliver, or we're going to see levels like we've seen this year, but it's something that is still uncertain. Now, let me go very quickly to the fiscal side. I'm going to be speaking about the revenues and then the expenditure a little bit. And basically, for the 2022 revenues side, I mean, you probably know the figures. We have seen very, very good numbers. In July, the tax revenue has increased by 11.3% in real terms, that excluding the excise tax on fuels. The income has increased 15.3%, the VAT 4%, and the import at 23.5%. So So that's very good numbers, considering that we were expecting a 4% growth, 4.1% of growth in the budget. So practically we are growing above what we expect. The budget revenues, basically the GDP elasticity as of now is 6.4%. The historic level of that elasticity, it was about 2. So we think that we've been doing a very good collection numbers here. Now, what is, we can discuss it more later in the Q&A, but basically for the rest of the year, we're expecting that the tax revenue will increase 13% versus 2021, and that it's excluding the fuel taxes. So basically, the part related to the economy and to the or the subtracting the part of the excise tax, we have a very good numbers relative to in real terms growth. That's going to be equivalent to 500 billion pesos, close to 1.6% of GDP. Now for the oil revenues, again, you probably know we have a very positive windfall for the budget prices because we were expecting a 5.5 dollars per barrel, and as of now, we in average we have seen a 96 dollars per barrel. So that has come with a 40% growth above program. And for the year, we think that this is going to be close to 19% in real terms growth. That's an equivalent of 400 billion pesos above the program. And this is, again, both for Pemex and the federal government. I mean, that for 2022 and what we've seen so far, we have some very positive numbers in terms of the metrics for Pemex. Both in terms of investment, which has been growing 26% in 2022 from 2018 to 2022, and that has supported the restabilization of the oil production, and also some decrease on the debt, which has helped a little bit with the tax breaks that we have given to Pemex. For 2023, the oil revenues, of course, are going to be decreasing because the oil prices are going to be lower, and we have we estimate that they're going to be lower. We have to use a formula in the budget. We are compelled, but we still think that the prices are going to be above the formula. But we don't factor that in the budget. We are estimating a lower price, and based on the formula. But let me just go through the oil production. Part because I saw some confusions that have been put in place regarding to the growth rate of the production. Basically, what we are estimating is an increase in oil production of 1%. So it's gonna be from 1.87 coming from a 1.83, and so we think that this is very conservative scenario, and basically what is mostly driven is by the private part. Pemex, we estimate that this is going to increase the production about 1.7%, of course from 2022 to 2022, but the privates are going to be increasing by 12%. So although they have a very low base because they produce close to 60,000 barrels per day, and they are going to be increasing from 60 to 67 barrels per day. In terms of the tax revenue, for 2023, we estimate a growth of 9.9% relative to 2022, although I have to say that this is counting the IEPS subsidy, the IEPS part, but once that we subtract the IEPS income, and the actual growth, it's 1.3%. So again, we believe that this is a very conservative scenario relative to the growth risk that we have in the economy. Basically, the income tax is going to be growing by 0.8% and the VAT by 1.5%, which is mostly the tax revenue part that is driving the tax revenues. Why is that? Basically, as we were discussing, the 2022 base, the tax base is very high, and this is because we have some non-recurring revenues. So coming from a very high tax base, I think we think that it's very conservative to do some slow growth and be better to expect surprised by positive numbers rather than being disappointed by higher numbers. Now, very briefly, what would happen in a stress revenue scenario? If we have a GDP growth of 0% in 2023, that would mean that we could lose about 140 billion pesos. But again, since we are starting from a very high base of tax revenues in 2022, basically that would mean that we are subtracting 1.7 growth rate from the economy. But if we assume that that we rebase the tax base and we assume that we have no growth at all, at least the revenue loss could be 7-8 billion pesos. So we believe that this is something that it's a risk scenario, but these amounts are not something that we should be stressed about, because basically they are in terms of the size of the packages are not that high, and we have plenty of room to accommodate for that kind of pressure. Now we also have some leeway in terms of the old revenues we discussed. Basically, we have a price of $68.7 per barrel. But as of now, the futures are at 7.8. So we have like $10 difference that would mean about 130 billion pesos if they were to materialize in 2023. On the expenditure side, let me briefly go and say that in terms of the infrastructure investment in 2022, the infrastructure investment is going to be at 3.4% of GDP. So this is the highest level since 2017. And in 2023, we're going to be investing in heavily. Basically, we have a 22% real growth relative to the 2022 budget. And then the investment in percent of GDP is going to reach 3.6%. So again, this is another historical level since 2017. The investment in some of the key projects, we can discuss it later if you want. There's also going to be some strengthening on the social development for the 2023 budget. We're estimating that the expenditure on social development is going to increase by 9.1%. Basically, it's social protection, 13% growth relative to 2022. Health is going to be increasing by 4% and education by 5%. Finally, just to remind you with the fiscal metrics, the debt that we measured the historical levels of the public sector borrowing requirements for the 2022 budget, we estimate that we're going to be reaching 48.9% coming from a 51% in the approved budget of 22, and in 2023 it's going to be 49.4%. Of course, that has some adjustment, basically regarding to the overall deficit, which is going to be lower than we expect in 2022, and we are going to be increasing it 0.6 percentage point in 2022, meaning from 3% that we expect that we are going to be closing this year to 3.6% deficit. So let me stop here and get the questions from you. Thank you.